Sinbad the porter set down his load and wiped sweat from his brow. He sat for a moment on top of it. The weather was unbearably hot. His life was an endless exercise in grueling labor, and there was never enough to eat. When would it end? As he sat there, catching his breath, he could hear strains of a lovely melody. He closed his eyes and let the music and the breeze wash over him. It smelled of aloe and roses. Sublime. As he calmed down, Sinbad noticed he was seated in front of a grand mansion. He shook his head, feeling envy surge through him. "How do some men have everything and I have nothing?" he muttered. Suddenly the door flung open. Before him stood the most imposing man Sinbad had ever seen. Even though the man was older, his eyes burned with an intimidating fire.
"I overheard you speaking about me. Do you dare insinuate that I don't deserve my home?"
No, of course not," the porter stammered apologetically. The last thing he needed was a powerful man angry with him. This man could destroy the porter.
"You will come with me."
The man pointed inside, towards a long corridor, where Sinbad could see nothing but an endless tunnel of darkness. Sinbad the porter gulped. He looked around. No one could help him. I'm Vanessa Richardson. You're listening to Tales. Today I'm sharing fantastical adventures from the seven voyages of Sinbad the Sailor, whose exploits and misfortunes have been told many times over for centuries. And while his stories include extraordinary and magical elements, Sinbad's voyages are grounded in the very real world of trade and exploration in his day. Keep in mind, the tales on this podcast are dark, sometimes scary, and full of adult themes. This episode includes multiple counts of gruesome deaths. Please exercise caution for children under 13. If you want to hear more tales, you can find all of Parcast's podcasts wherever you listen to podcasts. Many of you have asked how to help the show. If you enjoy Tales, the best way to help us is to leave a 5-star review online. Like another tale we've shared on this podcast, Ali Baba and the 40 Thieves, The Seven Voyages of Sinbad the Sailor is a popular story from 1001 Nights. And like Ali Baba, it was added to the anthology much later and not originally included in the early Arabic versions. These stories were added by the French writer Antoine Galland when he translated the tome in the early 18th century. Ali Baba and Sinbad were old folk stories that were recounted to him on a trip to Syria. One of the notable traits of Sinbad the Sailor is that while he's born of privilege, he is an exceedingly generous and good-hearted individual. These traits are not often attributed to characters of power and wealth in literature. Moreover, Sinbad is a man of honor, and his acts of gratitude and service in his community stand as reminders that giving back to God can help get you out of some serious trouble. Trouble we'll get back to now. The destitute porter looked up at the wealthy merchant, begging to go on his way.
"My lord, the heat made me speak foolishly. Being in the sun long enough can make anyone delirious,"
Sinbad the porter stammered, knowing that a powerful man of influence could end his life on a whim with no consequences.
"What is your name, man?"
the lord demanded.
"Sinbad,"
the porter responded nervously. The man narrowed his eyes. He then suddenly tossed his head back and laughed jovially.
"Why, wouldn't you know it? My name is Sinbad, too. What fortune has brought us together, Sinbad the porter and Sinbad the sailor. Follow me."
Sinbad the porter laughed nervously. He still wasn't sure where this was going, but he had to oblige, following Sinbad the sailor down a dark hall. Perhaps the sailor did not want another Sinbad in this town. Sinbad the porter followed the rich man into a large open room where a feast was taking place. This was where the man had wanted to take him? He looked around at the guests.
all clearly wealthy men and women.
"I shall tell all of you of my adventures. I promise that I have suffered extraordinarily. I assure that not only will you see I have earned my tenure in this beautiful abode, but the threats I have encountered are more than any one man should endure."
Sinbad the sailor looked to his guests, who waited on his word with bated breath.
"Tonight, I shall tell you the first story."
Sinbad the sailor was born to a wealthy merchant. When his father died, he inherited a large estate, but he quickly fell into a life of wanton lust and recklessness. He squandered his money and sullied his father's name. Homeless, penniless, and rejected by all who knew him, Sinbad took a long look at himself and realized that he must do better to honor his father's memory. He set out to become a merchant and found contract work on a merchant ship. Sinbad did not take to the sea naturally. He started off with a nasty bout of seasickness. The image of Sinbad reeling over the edge of the ship had his fellow sailors in stitches. He was a rich boy who hadn't seen a day of hard labor in his life, but soon he settled into the rhythm of nautical living. Sinbad developed a camaraderie with his fellow seafarers, and he became eager to have his own tales of excitement and glamour. So many things these men had seen, so many strange and exotic lands. He also discovered his knack for trade. At each port, he mastered the art of bartering and negotiation. The merchant trade was his calling. He was eager to return to Baghdad with his profits and wares from faraway lands and tell his friends of his own exploits. After several stops, the men docked on a small, calm island with a green meadow to take a respite from the hustle and bustle of the seaports. As Sinbad lay in the meadow, he thought of his father and how often he had spoken of his own adventures. Now, Sinbad understood the excitement he had seen shining in his father's eyes. Certainly, he'd be pleased with his son. Sinbad closed his eyes in satisfied repose. Sinbad's eyes shot open. The ground was quaking. The entire island trembled. He saw some of his fellow sailors sprinting to the ship. The captain had already pulled up the anchor and was sailing far away from this cursed place before it sank into the ocean. Sinbad was too far to call for them to wait for him. They had no idea he was still on the island. Curses! He had wandered too deep into the valley. Suddenly, the flat meadow tilted at an angle and he slid down towards the sea. His heart pounded in terror. He tried to grip the ground, but it was no use. Sinbad looked up and saw that the island he was on was no island at all. It was the back of a massive sea monster. He tried valiantly to grip the soft, sparse green hair on the monster's back. How foolish he had been to mistake the hairs for grass! But it was no use. The skin was too slick. The monster thrashed and bucked and tossed Sinbad into the sea like a rag doll. The creature slithered back into the depths of the sea, leaving Sinbad without an inch of dry land to stand on. The waves knocked Sinbad about, and he almost got slapped in the head with a piece of driftwood. Sinbad managed to catch it and clung to the wood tightly as he watched his ship disappear into the horizon. He was completely and utterly alone. For the next day and night, the ocean relentlessly tossed Sinbad over and under waves. His skin became bloated and his throat parched. He was going to die. Sinbad closed his eyes and waited for his fate. Drowsily, Sinbad lifted his head from the driftwood. He had no idea how long he had been asleep. He looked up and saw that the waves were carrying him in towards the shore of a beautiful island. And further down the shore, he saw a group of people yelling and upset. Right past the breaking waves, a sea monster strangled a horse. They were about the same size, but the monster was much more adept at being in the waves. It easily had the advantage over the frightened mare. Suddenly energized by the realization that he wasn't dead, Sinbad swam valiantly to the poor horse. He could save it, he was sure. Sinbad felt the local's eyes on him as he took his soggy plank of wood and bashed it over the sea monster's head. A bedraggled man washing up to shore, suddenly intervening to save a prized mare? Sinbad was a hero to them, he knew it. He whacked the sea monster again. Its eyes rolled back in its head, and it released its grip on the horse, slithering under the waves. At the very least, it had been knocked unconscious. Frantic and wild-eyed, the horse galloped back to the shore. Drained, Sinbad allowed the waves to carry him up to the sandy shore, where he collapsed. Tiny waves crashed over his head, but he didn't care. He was on blessed, blessed land again. The group surrounded Sinbad, awed. They asked him who he was and where he had come from. They gave him sips of coconut water, which revived him enough to recount his miraculous journey of survival. One of the men stepped forward, took Sinbad's hand, and bowed deeply.
"You have spared the life of the Maharaja's most beloved mare. We must now take you to him. He will be deeply indebted to your valorous act."
Sinbad was still delirious, but he at least knew he was now in the hands of people who could help him. Sinbad was led to the Maharaja's palace, a glorious compound of exquisitely tiled buildings and palm trees, elaborate fountains and gilded walkways, rose-scented air and gauzy canopies. The Maharaja met him with a deep bow. He listened in awe as Sinbad told his miraculous tale of survival. Beyond that, the Maharaja was overwhelmed with gratitude that Sinbad had saved his beloved mare, and he wanted to compensate Sinbad for his act of bravery. As thanks, the Maharaja gave him a new ship, fully outfitted to travel the world and stocked with lavish riches, aloe, camphor, nutmeg, and cloves. The bounty more than made up for his goods that had disappeared with the ship that abandoned him on the sea monster's back. Sinbad knew his father would be proud of how his son had handled his first voyage into the world of trading. He'd returned to Baghdad having earned his own success.
"Now, what did you think?"
Sinbad the porter jolted out of his reverie at Sinbad the sailor's pointed question. He'd been so transported by the story that he'd forgotten where he was. Sinbad the sailor had indeed enchanted all of his guests with his tale.
"I loved it," Sinbad the porter responded sincerely. "A most incredible adventure."
Sinbad the sailor handed the porter a handful of money. He couldn't tell how much it was, but it was certainly more than he'd seen in his life.
"Don't think that that's the only hardship I endured to get here. Come back tomorrow, and I shall tell you of my second voyage."
Sinbad the sailor winked. The next evening, Sinbad the porter arrived at Sinbad's house right as the sun set. A servant opened the door for the humble porter as if he were an honored guest. The porter bashfully lowered his head at the deferential treatment and made his way to the dinner parlor. Sinbad and his guests were relaxed and comfortable, just where the porter had left them, as if all they did was leisurely nibble on fine fruits and cheeses. Sinbad clapped his hands for his guests to hush their conversations.
"Our distinguished guest has arrived."
The affluent men and women smiled at Sinbad the porter. He blushed.
"Let me tell you of my second adventure. Perhaps this will convince you that I have earned my place at the head of this table."
Sinbad the sailor smiled slyly, and his eyes became dreamy, remembering his next voyage. Back in Baghdad, Sinbad slipped back into his life of decadence. He threw parties, ate well, bedded a new woman every night, but he found his life boring. His heart longed for adventure. He felt it wasn't enough to go on a voyage once and proclaim to be a merchant of his father's caliber. He must prove himself again. And so he found a new merchant ship that would take him aboard. Sinbad again set course to strange and foreign lands. He traveled happily from island to island and obtained a great profit from the commodities he exchanged. One day, in between ports, they stopped to rest on a small island. The island was uninhabited, but it had many beautiful flowers and delectable fruits ripe for the picking. Sinbad found a cozy palm tree and a bottle of wine and fell into a deep slumber. When he awoke, he noticed that it was eerily quiet. Normally on stops, there was raucous laughter and revelry from his fellow mates, but now, nothing. He ran to shore quickly. The ship was gone. Sinbad fell to his knees, cursing himself for wandering so far away again and losing track of time. Once again, he'd been left alone to die at the hands of the elements. We'll continue Sinbad's voyages after this break. And now, back to the story. Abandoned by his ship, Sinbad wandered the island, hoping to come across civilization, or better yet, another ship. He came across an expansive meadow and noticed a large white dome protruding out of the ground. Odd. Was it man-made? He hurried over to see if it was some sign of civilization that they hadn't found when they arrived. The dome was even larger than he first thought. He walked around the perimeter, perplexed. Just then, the sun disappeared behind a giant cloud. The entire sky blackened. Just his luck, a storm was coming. But no, it was no cloud, but a magnificent, enormous bird. He knew it must be a roc, a legendary bird he'd heard other mariners speak of in awe. The bird had a wingspan big enough to cover a house. Rocs were known to pick up and devour baby elephants, so Sinbad knew that it could easily make mincemeat of him. Sinbad sprinted to a nearby tree and crouched behind it, hoping to get a better glimpse of the legendary creature. But he got much more than a glimpse. The bird soared closer to the ground, and then closer, finally alighting on the dome. Oh, that dome was the roc's egg. As night settled in, Sinbad watched the roc fall asleep on top of the egg. It dawned on him that his only way out of here would be with that bird. There were no humans on this island, and he hadn't seen a passing ship yet. Sinbad crept to the slumbering bird, slightly intimidated by its size. It could swallow him in one gulp. He tiptoed to the bird's massively clawed feet and unwound his turban. He delicately but firmly wrapped the material around the bird's ankle and wrapped the rest around his waist. He knotted it tightly so that he would not have to worry about being dropped in mid-flight. And then he tried his best to sleep. Who knew where he would wind up, but he was willing to take his chances. A hard yank woke Sinbad up. Whooshing into the air, he tried to get his bearings. The sky above and the ocean below were each so blue, he didn't know whether he was right side up or upside down. After some time, the roc took an abrupt dive. Sinbad shut his eyes and gripped the bird's leg with all of his might. He didn't want to slam into the ground before the bird landed, crashing to a certain death. The bird landed elegantly on sand, and Sinbad rapidly undid the knot of his turban attaching him to the roc, eager to seek out humanity. He was lucky he had done so quickly, because the bird had no sooner landed than it scooped up a serpent of extraordinary length for lunch and soared back into the sky. Sinbad took a moment to catch his breath. Much to his chagrin, he was on another desolate island. There were no people, no fruit-bearing trees, but there was something astonishing. The valley was covered with the largest diamonds he had ever seen. Sinbad would have been ecstatic at this development, but it was tempered by the fact that the valley was overrun by giant serpents. Serpents like the one the rock had captured when it landed. With the bird out of sight, they slid out from under rocks and swirled around the diamonds. Sinbad ducked behind a diamond to hide and think. Night was falling now. With more serpents appearing by the second, it seemed like the oversized snakes made themselves scarce during the day. That was when the rocks would come to hunt. But at night, they slithered about, looking to hunt themselves. Sinbad hid himself in a small cave, securing it with a boulder. He was hungry and growing weak. How much longer could he live? The next morning, a loud noise awoke Sinbad. He quietly rolled the small boulder protecting his cave out of the way so he could see what was happening outside. A large hunk of raw meat had been tossed down into the valley. Perplexed, he wondered if someone was feeding the serpents. It didn't make sense, but he was optimistic that this was a sign of human life. From out of nowhere, a massive eagle, larger than he had ever seen, swooped down and grabbed the hunk of meat. A particularly glittery diamond stuck to it. The eagle soared back to the top of the valley, where a cluster of trees perched above the deep ravine. The eagle had a nest there. And more than that, Sinbad could make out something in the distance. Men gathering beneath the tree. Diamond hunters! Ha ha, what an ingenious plan. They clearly knew the treacherousness of entering the valley floor, so they let the eagles do the work for them. Sinbad fell to his knees and praised Allah. There was a way out after all. Sinbad quickly devised a plan. He'd get out of this valley today. He hurriedly rushed into the field of diamonds and grabbed as many as he could. His turban would be handy yet again. Sinbad found the largest and most succulent piece of meat that he could find and secured his turban around it so that the eagle would surely carry him out of there. He wasn't sure the eagle could carry a full-grown man, but he had to take a chance. They certainly looked powerful and well-fed with all of the free meat being tossed about. Sinbad buried himself in the sand so that the snakes would not detect him. Luckily, in almost no time at all, a large male eagle spotted the chunk of meat and dove headlong into it. He ripped Sinbad up from the earth with such ferocity, Sinbad's back almost snapped. Before he knew it, Sinbad found himself dropped into the eagle's nest. He quickly untied his turban to avoid the eagle's ravenous appetite, and almost as soon as he scrambled to the edge of the nest, Sinbad came face to face with a diamond hunter that was so surprised to see Sinbad, he almost fell out of the tree. The rest of the diamond hunters were at the bottom of the tree, eagerly awaiting news of the diamond the eagle had retrieved this time. The man that Sinbad almost butted heads with quickly went from shock to anger.
"Thief, where did you come from?"
he demanded once he regained sure footing on the tree. Sinbad held up his hands, showing he meant no harm.
"Good sir, I assure you that you should show me some respect."
The man glowered back at Sinbad. "Not likely." Sinbad pulled out the most magnificent diamond from his pockets. The hunter's eyes widened at the sight of the diamond, bigger than a man's fist.
"Rest at ease. I have enough diamonds for you and your men."
Sinbad smiled as he saw that he had the man's attention. After Sinbad and the man climbed down the tree together, he shared his wild tale of abandonment and flying rocks and serpents, and the men listened in awe at Sinbad's boldness and bravery. Sinbad also offered to share as many diamonds as should please the jewelers, but the leader took only one modest diamond.
"This is enough to accumulate all the fortune I desire," he told Sinbad gratefully and offered him passage home.
And once again, Sinbad made his way back to Baghdad. He gave his riches to the poor and rested satisfied with a job well done. But soon, he again grew itchy with idleness and purposelessness. He had a merchant's blood flowing through him, and he was still young enough to crave adventure on the high seas. And so, as he concluded this tale, he instructed Sinbad the porter to return the next night. He sent the porter home with another sack, containing even more money. Visions of diamonds and rocks danced in the porter's head as he drifted off to sleep that night. The next evening, Sinbad the porter arrived early to hear Sinbad the sailor recount the next voyage. Each one seemed more exhilarating and incredible than the one before. After selling the diamonds, Sinbad had given much of his wealth to the poor and to the mosque he attended, but he still retained an obscene amount of money and delved quickly into excess. After some time, he realized no amount of wealth in Baghdad could satiate him quite like life at sea. No life or death stakes, no giant rocks or sea dragons, no chance of finding that something he knew was missing, but couldn't quite put his finger on. The third voyage appeared doomed from the start. As soon as they left the port, roiling tempests dictated their course. They seemed incapable of staying on their intended trajectory, and finally, the captain of the ship was forced to veer to the nearest landmass. The captain, Kadir, was a smart, seasoned man who had seen his share of hardship on the seas. The men trusted his judgment, even though the islands they were approaching had an ominous feeling.
"Listen, men," Kadir announced. "We are approaching a most hostile string of islands. They are inhabited by uncouth, hairy men, and while you may not think they are threatening, for they are only 2 feet high, I promise you these dwarves are not to be provoked."
One man snickered, but the captain silenced him with a glare. This was no laughing matter.
"These tiny, violent men outnumber us. They reproduce so quickly, they're larger than a swarm of locusts. If we should happen to kill but one of them, they will descend upon us and murder us before we should even know what happened."
Almost as soon as he said the words, the men could hear a buzzing growing. They exchanged glances of terror.
"They're coming!"
Kadir shouted, his voice cracking with fear. We'll face the red imps right after this. And now, back to the story. Sinbad couldn't believe his eyes. Captain Kadir was right. Covered in so much red hair it could have been fur, the tiny men swarmed the ship. They swam from every direction with such agility they could have been part fish.
"Don't resist," the captain called out. "Don't lay a hand on a single one."
Sinbad and his fellow men stood in disbelief at the proceedings. The dwarves climbed aboard like an army of ants. The sailors held their breath, frightened at their ability to move with such swift precision and unison. The dwarves efficiently and quickly dismantled the sails, then forced Sinbad and his fellow mates off of the ship. They went willingly, too stunned to resist. The dwarves didn't say a word, their communication effortless, as if they were a buzzing hive. And before the sailors knew it, the swarm of ginger dwarves disappeared with their ship, as if they had never been there at all. Finally, the men came out of their defeated reverie and decided it was high time to find someone who could help them off the island. Kadir led their group away from the shore, and eventually they came across a palatial building. The men breathed a huge sigh of relief at their good fortune. The gate was made of ebony, and the expansive lawn was well manicured. A canopy of palm fronds shaded them as they approached the large edifice. Someone of wealth, power, and impeccable taste lived here. Or perhaps less than impeccable taste. Sinbad looked down at his feet. He had accidentally crushed a human skull. Another man had stepped squarely on a femur bone. The men looked all around them. The porch of this place was surrounded entirely by human bones. The men watched in horror as a terrifying giant emerged from the palace. He was grotesque, with only one single eyeball on the center of his forehead. Sharp teeth protruded from his mouth like ominous fangs. His ears were warped and oversized, more like an elephant's than a human man's. His nails were razor-like talons that looked like they could slice through any mortal. But his lower lip was the most grotesque of all. It hung down like a sagging piece of flesh, swinging limply and bumping against his chest as he walked. Sinbad and his company all fell to the ground, pretending to be dead, so that the giant might mistake them for carcasses and leave them be. But they could not fool the giant. He came by each one of them slowly, sniffing like a hound. The giant picked up Sinbad first and pinched his limbs, checking for tenderness. But the giant found Sinbad's malnourished sailor body too thin and wiry and dropped him to the ground. The giant went by each man and disdainfully inspected all of them. None were juicy or succulent enough, until he came to the captain, the fattest of all. The giant held Kadir up, ogling him with his one eye. The men held their breath. With lightning quick speed, the one-eyed giant ran a spear through Kadir, sticking him like a pig. The giant turned and took his meal to his fire pit, where he stoked a great fire quickly and set the captain on a spit, roasting him. The men tried not to vomit at the smell of their captain being cooked like a roast. After the giant devoured Kadir in just a few bites, he smacked his hideous lips together. Spit and bone grit spewed onto the men. They cowered, still too frightened to move from the ground where they lay. The giant then walked over to his porch and plopped down, instantly falling into a deep, satisfied slumber. Immediately, Sinbad looked over at the other men, knowing it was time to spring into action if they were going to live to see another day. He grabbed the wooden spit Kadir had been roasted on. It was sharp and still warm to the touch. He waved to the men to grab the other sticks strewn about the grounds. When each man had one, they silently crept over to the sleeping giant. They circled him and raised the sharp spears all at once. When Sinbad nodded, they all plunged their sticks deep into the unsuspecting giant's eye. Over and over, Sinbad and his men rammed their sticks into the giant's eye. The giant grunted and grasped for them. They jumped out of his way, knowing just one swipe from his talon-like hands could slice open their chests. Finally, they ran as fast as they could back through the ebony gates towards the shore. When they made it, they found planks and timber lying about and wound them tightly together, making rafts so each man could get off this cursed place. They worked through the night. Just as the dawn was breaking, a great angry cry came ripping through the trees. Sinbad turned and saw the blinded giant, led by the hands by two other one-eyed giants. These giants could see everything and were coming straight for the men. The men launched themselves on the rafts, trying to make haste, but the giants gained on them quickly. Sinbad paddled faster than he thought he could, until he heard a crunch. The giants were grabbing the rafts and splitting them in two, drowning every man they could get their hands on. Sinbad wanted to turn around to save his fellow seamen, but he knew that he was powerless against the giants. He had no weapons. All he could do was get away from them as fast as he could. The sea bandied the surviving men about all night, finally washing them up on a rocky shore, where the men passed out from sheer exhaustion. Sinbad was awoken by one of his men's terrified cries for help. A snake of incredible size was swallowing the man whole. It was too late. They watched the man's head disappear into the snake's mouth. Sinbad and his comrade leapt up, running as quickly as possible to escape the same fate, and climbed a nearby tree. But the serpent followed. Sinbad was higher up in the tree than his fellow sailor, who was taken by the snake in one bite. Suddenly lazy, the snake slithered down the tree to digest his meal, but Sinbad knew he could not waste an instant. He tied branches around himself to form a blockade between him and the snake. That night, when the moon was high, the snake came back to Sinbad's tree, poking and winding his way around it. He couldn't make it through, for now. How long would this last? How long could Sinbad survive, tucked in this cocoon, before he died of dehydration? Sinbad closed his eyes and prayed to Allah that his fortification would last the night. He had no friend, no food, and no way off the island. He needed a miracle. Thanks for listening to Tales. Next week, we'll continue the tale of the seven voyages of Sinbad the Sailor, as Sinbad must figure out his way off the deadly island and make his way home. If you want to listen to more episodes of Tales or Parcast podcasts, you can find all of Parcast's podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, CastBox, TuneIn, or your favorite podcast directory. Some listeners have been asking how to help the show. Well, if you enjoy the show, the best way to do that is to leave a 5-star review. Join me in 2 weeks for another dark and surprising fairy tale. Tales was created by Max Cutler. It is a production of Cutler Media and is part of the Parcast Network. It is produced by Max and Ron Cutler, sound design by Kenny Hobbs, with production assistance by Paul Mahler. Additional production assistance by Maggie Admire and Carly Madden. Tales is written by Gina Machusek. I'm Vanessa Richardson.